welcome back. Welcome to another episode of the Bonsai Stuff podcast. From me, Scott Martin, from Bonsai Matsu in lockdown Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. It's awkward times at the moment, but it's really positive too because we're about to hit spring in a few weeks, mid-August now. As I look around the workshop, from wall to wall to wall, all I can see is the pines that have been repotted and the junipers and all the trees that have been given that little bit of rejuvenation that they so wellingly deserve. And I'm waiting for them now to do their thing. When spring gets here, the buds will start extending and then a different type of work will commence. But for now, it's all about sore hands and dirt everywhere and making sure that those new pots that have been purchased throughout the year finally get used and the trees maybe get a bit of a new look and new feel about them. So it's always good times repotting. I do enjoy it immensely. I think it's one of the most important things that we can do with our bonsais to make sure that we focus heavily on the roots, which there translates into the strength and health of the tree somewhere down the track. So repotting, not daunting, great, messy, sore hands, long nights, but you know, it's the window of opportunity that we have to make sure that we can get it done. So strap yourself in. It's going to be a good podcast, this one. I want to make sure that you guys get something thoroughly enjoyable out of it, and I'm looking forward to it. So enjoy. Football the other day, and there was a young player, pretty inexperienced. It was his debut game, and he made a shocking mistake, which is fair enough. You know, you're entitled to make mistakes. But one of the commentators said, when the fundamentals are incorrect, you're not giving yourself a chance. And I thought that really applies to us too with bonsai. So you can look at refinement and high end techniques and that sort of thing, but really it's the fundamentals. If you can't get the fundamentals right, then really you don't stand a chance. You know, so repotting, you know, you want to make sure that you're maximizing the strength through the roots of the tree, which is really important. It's so easy to overlook or to skimp or cut corners when you're repotting with the medium that you're using, or just looking at getting a tree into the pot. Wherein, you know, you're not working the roots correctly and you're just shoving the tree in there, tying it in, if you even tie it in, and then moving on to the next phase to make the tree look pretty. But without that real fundamental focus on the roots of the tree, you've got no chance. You're not gonna take the step in the direction that you need. You know, we look at resource allocation too. You know, it's balancing the strength via pruning or plucking. That's a real fundamental, and that's what you're doing. If you take away your focus from pruning to make things look pretty, and you're looking to balance the tree, and that's the ultimate goal of bonsai always, is to have a balanced tree, to have each region of the tree at the same level of strength and use of tree's resources, that's a real win. If you can get that right, then the design stuff becomes a lot easier, whereas if you're just pruning things to look pretty, then really, you know, you're going to miss out longer term. Watering. I can't iterate how important watering is. It's, you know, as we head into our growing season here in Melbourne, in Australia, watering becomes more and more important and critical that you get it right. And you've got to have that skill set behind you. You know, not watering a beautiful bonsai, he's not going to keep it a beautiful bonsai for very long. Feeding, we've got to make sure that you feed your trees. Understanding the feeding process, you know, breaking it down. Is your tree in development or is it in refinement stage? You know, when should I fertilize? How much should I fertilize? What should I fertilize? The internet's a broad place, and I'm sure that you'll find, you know, an article somewhere or someone that tells you that using the remains of a Portuguese duck will be the best source of fertilizer you can get for your bonsais. Whether it is or whether it isn't, it's not what I'm here to debate, but what I think you need to do is I think you need to do your research and check out local growers that are doing things really well in your local area and maybe ask the question, hey, what do you fertilise? When do you fertilise? You know, what should I do with this tree? Especially if you're not, haven't got many years of bonsai, or you might have a lot of years of bonsai development under your wing, but, you know, maybe the trees could be better. And I think focusing in on how to make them better, you know, focusing on the fundamentals of feeding, you know, should be a primary goal. Repeatedly doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results is just crazy. It's not going to work. It's a definition of stupidity. You need to, if you want to take your bonsai to the next level, then you need to do things differently and you need to be open to suggestions. You need to take on as much education and learning as you possibly can from those that, you know, you should listen to. A lot of people out there, and, you know, just because they're the loudest doesn't mean they're the most correct. I'd really be mindful on where you take your advice from, and that should come from, you know, if you like what you see and what's presented, then yeah, by all means, ask the question. If not, you know, enjoy, scroll, move on. Positioning, another basic fundamental that I see, it really gets messed up a lot of the time. You know, positioning for sun, for airflow, for exposure to the elements. You know, over sheltering your trees is far worse than overexposure for your trees. They need to be grown and treated like they're a tree. You know, just because you put them in a pot doesn't make them special. When it gets to pest and disease, you know, make sure that you're on the front foot. When there's a problem, treat it, but then always backtrack to work out what caused the problem and how can you prevent it from happening next time. There's always a root cause for something going wrong with your trees. And you need to make sure that you invest the time in researching it and fixing it, learning from any mistakes that might fall down. Design and styling always comes later. It's always the fundamentals that should be the primary focus of all of us. And even when you've got a beautiful tree and its design is exactly what you want, and you know that's the one that you go to first and puts a smile on your face, well, you've still got to treat it with utmost respect for the fundamentals. You know, you need to go through all of those things that we've talked about to make sure that you're giving yourself and the bonsai the best opportunity it possibly can have. So we're coming towards the end of repotting season. It's been a long couple of months, I can tell you. There's a lot of trees that have been pushed through the workshop. But as I said, it's all worth it. Every single piece of root that's been cut off and every piece of potting medium that's been put into place with a chopstick, the hours and hours and hours of work that have gone into it, I'll see the results of that and the reward from that for the next, you know, years to come. So while repotting is really important, repotting aftercare is just as important, if not more important, and how you treat the tree and how you manage it going forward after it's had its roots hacked. You know, once you've taken off that portion of roots, you know, 25-30%, whatever it is, it's come out of a black tub into a bonsai pot, maybe even more, you know, 60-70% of the roots have come off. You can't just expect that tree to go back to its previous state. You know, there's going to be a period of shock for the tree, and how you manage that is really, really super important. You need the tree to settle and start to grow before you expose it to the elements. So for me, my process is to keep them in a sheltered spot. For me, it's my workshop. It's an indoor room. There's large glass doors, but there's no exposure to direct sunlight. There's no exposure to wind. There's no exposure to temperature fluctuations. It's a very calm, static environment. The air conditioner or heater doesn't get run in that room. It's just very, very mild. So there's very little chance of the tree being disturbed in any way. And I like to think of it like, you know, it's a chance for the tree to just stop, catch its breath, work out where it's at in the cycle of life, and suddenly then start to push roots and push new foliage. Once I see that new foliage starting to come, I'll then take that as an indication that the roots are starting to grow, you know, that one-to-one ratio. So as the foliage grows, the roots are going to grow also. So the healing process is starting to occur below the soil surface. I'll always use a light layer of sphagnum moss on top of the medium. I do that for a number of reasons. One is it protects the surface roots and allows them to grow. With the medium that I use, it's a very open mix, scoria, pumice, pine nuggets. And they're all sort of, you know, 5 to 10 mil in size. So there's quite an open area for the roots to grow below the soil surface. But at the surface, a lot of air can get there, and where the air can get into the mix, the roots won't grow. So I find the sphagnum being on top of the mix allows the roots almost to come directly to the very surface of the pot, which means that my real estate that I've got for roots to grow in is maximized to the pot. I also use it as a telltale. So once you've repotted the trees and you water them, the sphagnum turns a nice sort of orangey colour. It stays that way while there's moisture still in the sphagnum. As the tree starts to take up water, as the roots start to grow and as the tree starts to wake up from the dormancy period, then the sphagnum starts to turn to a lighter shade and head towards the white original colour that it was when it was first chopped up. So I use the sphagnum as a telltale for me to say, okay, well, the tree needs water now after repotting because it's starting to dry out. Then when I see that starting to happen day on day and the tree is then starting to get aggressively growing and there's foliage to match and the roots are taking up moisture and the sphagnum's drying on a very regular basis, that's when I'll slowly start the exposure process. I call it day release. I'll take the trees outside during the day, put them out on the bench, let them get exposed to the air movement, to the sun, partial sun, whatever it is. And then at night time, as the temperature starts to drop, I'll pick the tree up and I'll bring it back into the workshop. Next day, I'll do the same thing. And I'll do that for about a week. And then after that, I'll move them up onto the bench, the growing bench, and they'll be put into a sheltered spot under some shade cloth, underneath another tree, or somewhere where they're not going to get full exposure, but they get that sort of 80% exposure to the elements. Then a few weeks later on, growth should be out there, should be starting to harden off, so it's not the fine, delicate growth that we get with our initial spring burst. And once I start to see that, then shade cloth starts to get withdrawn because by then the frosts have disappeared. But for us in Melbourne, the frosts are still coming. I looked at the weather forecast last night and there's cold weather coming overnight in the next couple of days. So it's you've got to be vigilant with it. If you just turn your back on the weather, then you'll possibly pay the price. You know, the trees always have limited resources, and you want to make sure that the use of those resources is maximized. So if you put the tree out into the frost, the tree gets flogged, leaves get burnt, fine, delicate branches die, waste of resources, tree's got to go back to step one, start regrowing again and push on. So if you want to get the most out of your trees, you've got to be vigilant in how you manage their exposure to the elements, especially during this early time, just after repotting.
We'll be right back.
Want to try making edibles, but you're not sure where to start? Or you love to experiment in the kitchen, but you could use some inspiration? Join me, Marge, host of Bite Me, the show about edibles. I help cooks make great edibles at home. Each episode, I walk listeners through a cannabis edibles recipe that I've tested in my own kitchen. Or learn alongside me as I interview professional chefs, culinary cannabis experts, and edibles enthusiasts. Whether you're seasoned or just getting into edibles, there's always more to learn about making great edibles at home. Tune in for fun and informative episodes every Thursday on your favorite podcasting app or at bitemepodcast.com. And stay high, friends.
Also, make sure that I give the trees sea salt. Now, this is a liquid seaweed tonic. It's not exposure to sea salt or anything like that. It's sea sol. So it's a product that we have available here in Australia, which works very well to help stabilize the trees and get them through the shock of repotting. No fertilizer until I start to see something happening in the growing season. And as transpiration kicks on, the tree starts to move and then it's exposed to the elements. And that's when, you know, that exposure happens, and depending on what stage the tree's at with fertilising. Fertilising's, you know, not for now. That's for a later podcast. The fertilising stage happens, and depending on the stage of development of the tree will determine the fertiliser that it gets. But anyway, like I said, that's for another time. So repotting aftercare is really, really super important. If you don't have a workshop or something like that, then, you know, a garage can be a nice place. Somewhere on a deck under a shelter, a roof where it stops the exposure to that frost. Keep it out of the sunlight for a little bit. You know, let the tree just catch its breath. Then I guarantee you, once the tree starts to push and starts to gain strength, that's when you'll start to see the results. So, like all good bonsai people, I'm always on the hunt for new trees, new stock. You know, having all these online platforms and social medias where people can post trees that they've collected or selling and stuff like that, it's always makes your heart flutter a little bit when you see one. But I'm hoping that what I can sow next might save you a little bit of heartache and a few bucks. And this comes from experience. Not all stocks are equivalent. Now, the good collectors will collect a tree, put it away, let it recover its strength. Then, only then, once it's got the appropriate root structure and it's, you know, almost guaranteed of surviving the process, then the tree will be passed on for sale. But that can be years down the track. You know, so good collectors don't just rip a tree out of the ground, throw it into a tub, and then flog the thing for top dollar. Where some poor enthusiast shells out hard-earned coin and doesn't get very much in return for a tree that, you know, possibly is just a stump in a pot with some dirt. So please be careful. Some of the questions I'd be asking would be, how long ago was it collected? How many seasons has it been through? What was the collecting process? What have you done to it after it's been collected? Don't just let the rush of blood, because something looks nice, make you jump into shelling out those hard-earned dollars for something which is almost certainly not going to survive the process. You know, the mortality rate of trees that are collected, depending on the species, depending on the collector, they can vary drastically. And, you know, it might be worthwhile tracking through a bit of the history on the collector as well as on the tree itself to see whether it's worth making that investment. Investing into something which is guaranteed or not surviving is not really an investment. It's a waste of money. So good stock can be hard to find, but you'll often find that the price of good stock, where it's had the correct amount of work done on it, you know, you'll pay for it, because someone's investing time and effort into making that tree survive and to be able to become a bonsai long term. And that's where nursery prices vary. So, you know, two trees that pretty much look the same, you know, one's been had its roots worked for 10-15 years is worth a lot more than a tree that's just come out of the ground and put into a pot. But I'd almost guarantee that the one that's had its roots worked for a long period of time is going to be a much better tree longer term. And that's where I would think about investing my money in that pile, as opposed to the other pile where it's going to end in heartache. So time for what's on the bench. So with this episode, I want to talk about hawthorns. You know, having talked about collected trees and stuff like that, one of the common ones that gets collected in Australia are hawthorns, and they make excellent bonsai. There's so much to like about them, so much to love about the character of a hawthorn, except for the spikes, which invariably draw blood. But they flower, they get little red berries on them. They're quite easy to collect. They're quite a hardy tree. They got beautiful bark, which flakes and really has great character to it. They'll backbud. They can develop branching quite easily from random spots. They do take a fair bit of work because of their growth can be quite coarse, and it's hard to get some of the finer ramified structure on the trees, but you can still get it. You just need to be on top of it with the pruning process. They can look a bit hedgy, which can be a downside to them, but just need to make sure that you're constantly on the pruning for the trees. And when you do let a sacrifice branch grow as well, they do thicken quite fast. So I've got one at the moment that I'm working on, a lower branch, which started as a bud last year, and this year the branch is about, you know, a metre long. So it's really, really developing quite quickly, which is great. And they get nice little knobbles on them, and nothing's perfect with them, and they carve well. They got great, they can get some great deadwood on them as well. I was working on one the other week, which is an enormous tree, and before I went to go and start work for the day, I woke up dreaming about the thing, which hasn't happened for a while. But, you know, to find that I've still got that passion and that drive to work on a species like a hawthorn is great. You know, getting the carving tools out and wiring, and then coming home and putting Band-Aids all over yourself because you've been cutting. Well, you know, that's what it is. And I was thinking about them and what do I like about them, and it's the perfection of imperfection with these things. You know, they aren't a perfect species, and they're not classical like a Japanese maple is, but the imperfection is what makes it perfect for me. I love them. You know, they're really a really exciting tree. So if you can get your hands on some especially a collected tree, because they do put out some really gnarly shapes. If you can get yourself one that's got that's been dug well and managed well, then, you know, I'd strongly suggest it, because they sort of suit a lot of different styles as well. You know, formals, informals, you know, cascading. They seem to tick the boxes for a lot of different shapes and designs, and they're a very hardy tree that respond well to what we do here. So I would suggest strongly getting onto hawthorns. So that brings us to the end of another podcast. Thanks for tuning in, as always. It's greatly appreciated, and I do appreciate all the comments and feedback, and that so many people enjoy it around the world. It's very enjoyable for me to know that one little snippet or piece of information I pass on hopefully helps you as an enthusiast carry on and enjoy bonsai that little bit more, which is very rewarding. So keep at it. Keep strong, and, you know, every time I work on my trees, I feel like my heart rate lowers a little bit. So in a world of different stresses and uncertain times, bonsai is the great foundation that we've all got. So please enjoy your trees. Please keep up with doing the best that you possibly can with what you've got. If I can help in any way, please let me know. Get in touch via the socials, Instagram, Facebook, email scott@bonsomatsu.com or via the website bonsomatsu.com. I'm always happy to stay in touch with you and look after yourselves. Be back soon. Enjoy the podcast and see you later. Bye.